Welcome to the Employment Law and HR Podcast with your host, Allison Cauley.
Hello and welcome to the Employment Law and HR Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Cauley. Thank you very much for tuning in and welcome back after the New Year Christmas break. This is the first episode of the new year 2019. So happy new year if it's not too late. This is episode 115 of the podcast. And for those of you who listen regularly will know that this is also episode 4 of a mini series on managing sickness absence. So thank you very much for everyone who's listened and tuned in the past. If this is the first time that you're listening to the podcast, maybe you've just found this episode in the first in the new year, then welcome. It's a podcast for HR people, managers, employers, and basically anybody who's interested in employment law and HR issues. And we cover a number of topics. And as I said, this week is just rounding off a mini series on managing sickness absence. So without further ado, I'm going to get into this week's featured content. In order to round off the mini-series, I'm just going to be tackling a couple of the frequently asked questions that arise around managing sickness absence. So these are things that arise with my clients. And I've also had a question from a listener, so thank you very much. The questions all follow on really from the issues that we've tackled in the first 3 episodes of this mini-series. So you can always go back and listen back. But the first question I have is, what if an employee is sick from their employment with you, but is still working in their other job? Now, just because an employee is fit to work in another job doesn't necessarily mean that they are fit to work for you or that they are lying about their sickness absence. It's certainly unusual for it to happen if the 2 jobs are similar in nature, or if the employee hasn't been to see their GP. But either way, you shouldn't really jump to conclusions that they are some way lying to you or that you can discipline them because they're still working in their other job. Now, when I say about other jobs, what I mean is that assuming that you already know that they have another job somewhere else. If they do, then the best thing to do is, if somebody is signed off sick, is to first look at their fit note to see if their doctor has referred to their being fit to work in the other job. And if the doctor hasn't done so, then I would start by having a conversation with the employee about it. There are situations that arise where somebody may be absent from work, particularly in relation to work-related stress, where the advice from their doctor could be that whilst they're not fit to work in their employment with you, so the employment that's causing them the stress, they are fit to work elsewhere. So if they've got a job with you that's making them stressed, but the other job isn't, then the GP or doctor can oftentimes agree that it's best for them to keep working in the other job. Until you explore that with the employee or with their doctor, it's going to be hard for you to justify disciplining them for working in the other job or taking any other action. So my advice is, don't necessarily conclude that because they're fit to work somewhere else, then they are fit to work for you. You should get some reassurance from their doctor if the fit note doesn't already mention it. And of course, if you don't already know, or you haven't already given permission for them to work elsewhere, and assuming they're not on a 0-hour contract with you, you can have a discussion with them, and it could be a disciplinary if they're working elsewhere without notifying you first. So the long and the short of it is, if you have any issues that arise like this, it's better to get some advice before you take action. The second frequently asked question is in relation to long-term sickness absence, and that is, do you have to wait until the employee's sick pay runs out before you can dismiss them for long-term ill health capability? Now, the short answer is no, you don't have to wait for their sick pay to expire before you can go through a capability process or terminate their employment. It is, however, a factor to consider, along with all the other reasonable factors that you would consider before you decide to dismiss somebody. But in my view, the primary issue when deciding to dismiss somebody for long-term ill health capability is what their medical prognosis is and their likely return to work. So the short answer is no, you don't have to wait until their sick pay expires, but it is just one of a number of factors to take into consideration with regards to the reasonableness of your decision. Question number three is, I have heard that there are extra requirements if the employee's absence is caused by an accident at work or in some way caused by the employer's actions or omissions. Well, you've heard correctly in that the Court of Appeal in a case decided that whilst it was still fair to terminate an employee's employment where their sickness absence had been caused by an accident at work, it is a requirement for employers in these circumstances to give additional consideration to the cause of their injury. Now, what this means is, in reality, is that if their work has caused them to be unwell, you should perhaps consider giving them slightly longer than you would somebody else in terms of the time you give them to recover before you start in capability. Or if, for example, the prognosis for their return to work is, let's just say, 6 months, and ordinarily you would have a policy of saying, well, 6 months would be too long to wait. But in this case, because their absence is caused by work, you might decide it would be reasonable in all the circumstances for you to give them that little bit extra time to recover and try to return. There is also a duty to look for alternative employment for them. And I would say, again, this is going to be a more stricter test where work has caused their ill health or injury. So as an employer, you would be looking at alternative employments for somebody who was not capable of doing their job, but particularly so where it's work that's caused it. It all goes to really, as we've been talking about throughout, the test of reasonableness of your decision and looking at whether you have behaved in a reasonable manner in reaching the decision to terminate their employment. So just summarise, if their ill health has been caused by an accident at work or some other work-related factor, then in my view, you need to have a more stringent look at alternatives and the length of time that they are off for. Question four is something that I have addressed before, but it's something that comes up quite often. And that is to say, can I dismiss an employee who is absent from work due to disability? So if their ill health or long-term ill health is being caused by a disability, or the reason for their absence is their disability, can you still terminate their employment if they're not fit for work? Well, the answer, again, is yes, as long as you follow all the steps that we've talked about in the previous episodes in relation to obtaining medical reports, looking at alternative employment, and reasonable adjustments. And where somebody has a disability, of course, you have that legal obligation to look at reasonable adjustments to enable them to be able to return to work or to not be at a detriment because of something at work. You need to tread carefully, of course, if you're terminating an employment of somebody for ill health regardless, but particularly so where they have a disability under the Equality Act. And I would certainly recommend that you seek some specialist advice in relation to that before you take that decision, because it can be high risk and it can be costly if you get it wrong. Question number five, what if an employee gets better and has a period of time with no absence, but has previously had lots of warnings in the past under the absence management procedures? So this question is in relation to where somebody has lots of frequent short-term absences and you've been through a process with them and given them warnings and set expectations. And what can happen is that an employee will get to a point in time in the process where they realise that they're at risk of losing their employment, and then they will do everything they can to ensure that they do not have any absences. So there's a period of time that follows where they are fit and healthy and attending work on a regular basis between periods of warnings. And then after a couple of months' time, perhaps, or even longer, they then start the pattern again of short-term absence. Now, there isn't an easy answer to this, I have to say, because each case will depend on the circumstances. But if it is just that an employee is sort of deliberately having a period of time where they aren't having any absence to avoid getting to the point of dismissal, then I think you should be having a particular conversation with them about it and giving consideration to reviving some of the previous warnings. Again, it does very much depend on the circumstances and how long this has been going on for. And maybe if it's the first time, the first pattern, then you may not be able to justify relying on the earlier warnings to, for example, terminate their employment. But if it is a regular pattern that's been going on, let's say for a couple of years, and you can show that actually over the course of a number of years, for example, the employee hasn't given you good, consistent service, then it may be enough to justify the termination of their employment. I would say that there are probably some wider issues there if it is happening like this that you should address. So some root cause analysis, trying to get to the real heart of why they have this pattern. And perhaps that could be obtaining medical reports, addressing their job role, their performance, the skills and experience they have, and why they are not able to give consistent service on a regular basis. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one, I have to say. And there is no easy answer. I would just say that you need to get some advice at the time and consider all of your options. Of course, in the tricky situations, you may decide that on a commercial basis, it's better for you to have a protected conversation. So that's an off-the-record conversation with the employee about their employment. If you think that they're really unhappy and, you know, it's taking a lot of management time, a lot of resources, it's causing difficulty with other staff, it might be the point at time at which you just say, okay, we've had enough of this, we'll make them an offer to terminate their employment by agreement rather than keep going round and round in circles. I know it's difficult because you think, why should I pay somebody who's not doing what they should be for me? But sometimes, as I say, it's the best option in the long run. So there are some solutions out there that can minimise the risk to you. But either way, I would recommend that you get some advice. And the sixth and final question has come from a listener. And Fern emailed me after listening to the podcast. She's a regular listener. And she said, I'd like to ask your opinion on how to deal with a situation when an employee goes off on medium to long-term sick leave just before a capability hearing at the end of a formal capability process. What's your advice on being able to pick back up that capability hearing when it's no longer viable to just extend the period of time that the employee had off sick? Now, what I'm assuming Fern means here is where an employee goes on medium to long-term sick during a capability hearing in relation to their ability to undertake their job role, rather than the capability hearing we were talking about earlier with somebody who is going through capability process because of sickness absence. Now, assuming that you are going through the capability process in relation to their job role, then it is quite typical that an employee will perhaps go off sick when things become tough, particularly if questions are being asked about their ability to do the job role, and maybe pressures being placed on them in relation to targets and performance. Now, in my view, I think you should make it quite clear to the employee that you are placing the capability process on hold at the stage that you're at, and that it will be revisited later on, obviously with support and assistance, depending on when they are fit to return to work. And then, depending on how the sickness absence goes, consider picking it back up again when they return, depending on where you are in the process. And then once they return, managing them fairly closely in relation to their performance and that sort of thing. Now, I talked just now in the answer to question 5 about making somebody an offer, but in my view, this kind of situation is the kind that lends itself the best to try to resolve things amicably and without the need for formal proceedings. Because if an employee has been going through a capability process due to their performance and then they've decided to go off sick, they probably either realise that they can't do the job or they're not up to it, or the pressure has become so much that it's made them unwell and therefore it's unrealistic to expect them to provide the level of service that you require when they return. So it could be that you either start by addressing the root cause of that and looking at it with a view to giving them an alternative job role or discussing alternative job roles, or you may decide that really now's the time for both parties to cut their ties and to move on. If you are in the process of doing a short-term capability process, so due to short-term absences, and then somebody goes off to medium to long-term, in my view, you can take those previous warnings into consideration when you're dealing with their new period of sickness absence. But again, if you're going to rely on those in relation to dismissal, you still have to go through the same process of obtaining medical reports and looking at the reasonableness of your decision to terminate their employment. So thank you very much to Fern for that question, following my appeal in the previous episodes for questions. So really, pulling everything together that I've talked about in the previous episodes and in this episode about managing sickness absence, you will see that it is really about having good communication with the employees, understanding the reasons behind their absence and why they're off sick, for managing things closely, and for following a fair procedure. You also need to look at and rely on medical evidence, up-to-date medical evidence about the employee's condition, and to consider all of the factors together when making your decision about whether it's reasonable to terminate someone's employment because of either short-term or long-term absence. Each case is very fact-sensitive, and no two cases are the same, no two people are the same. So whatever happens in your business, it's really important to avoid the risk and to get some advice before you make your decision. At least, even if you have advice and you choose not to listen to it, you know what the risks are. And quite often, I'll tell my clients, look, the legal position is this. This is the best case that you should follow. But I understand, obviously, you need to make a decision on a commercial basis. And if you're prepared to take the risk, then you can do, but it could be a risk of, for example, unfair dismissal or disability discrimination. Don't feel that obtaining advice means that you have to follow what your advisor says. Of course, it's your business, it's your situation, so it's up to you what you do. We will just tell you where the risk lies and what the best practice is. My view is, aside from the legal risks with managing sickness absence, there are a number of other risks to your business. So reputationally, how you handle and deal with situations with people, the impact that it can have on others. So for example, if you fail to address sickness absence appropriately or in a fair manner, then it can lead to those employees who are at work feeling hard done by or that they're being treated unfairly. And it can mean that you lose good staff. It can mean that you fail to attract good staff. And you could get a reputation as a really poor employer. So there are a number of risks and factors, aside from the legal ones, that you need to consider when dealing with sickness absence and managing absences. Ultimately, and I think I said this in the first episode of the mini-series, being the best employer that you can and providing a good work environment, good support system, and making it a place where people actually want to come to work is by far the best way of stopping sickness absences. Of course, you will have circumstances that arise, but if yours is a business where you have frequent absences from a number of staff, then I would be looking at addressing some of the underlying factors that are causing those rather than going in all guns blazing in relation to disciplinary action. So think about whether managers or ways of working are actually the ones that are causing the sickness absence first. Ultimately, communication with your staff will save you money in the long run, and that is the best way of dealing with sickness absence and all other issues, to be honest. I do hope that you've enjoyed this mini-series on managing sickness absence. Of course, as always, if you have any questions, any scenarios that arise in your workplace, or you want any advice and assistance, then myself and my colleagues would be very happy to help you. I do run a solicitor's firm. We specialise in employment law and HR. It's called Real Employment Law Advice, and we advise employers and employees throughout the UK. There are three solicitors now within the firm. There's myself, my colleague Miranda, who's based from our Salisbury office and covers the South Coast, and Albert Bargery, who has recently joined us in our office on the Isle of Wight, but who also advises clients across the UK. So do not hesitate to give us a call. You can contact us by the telephone, which I don't think I've said on this before, but you can do. And our telephone number is 01983 897003, or you can email Alison at realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk and we'd be very happy to help you. For employers, we do have our innovative HR Harbour service, which is a monthly subscription service for employers where we can provide you with advice and assistance at different levels at a fixed cost, so you know exactly what you're paying for and you can utilise our services not only to deal with problems but to be proactive. Again, if you're looking to make changes with your HR providers in the future, or you just want to have that peace of mind to know that you've got an expert on the end of the phone without having to worry about huge costs, then do get in touch. Again, I'd be very happy to discuss with you and there's no obligation. We can have a coffee or a chat via Skype or the telephone and I can give you a quote for the services that we can provide. Again, it's Alison at realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk. Many thanks for listening and do continue to connect with me via LinkedIn and to send over your questions for future podcast episodes. I look forward to speaking to you again in 2 weeks and have a great week. Thanks again for listening. Just want to finalise by saying I wouldn't be a lawyer unless I had a legal disclaimer. So I must just say to you that the information in this podcast is for information only. It's general review and a general update. It's always necessary to get specific legal advice about your circumstances. So please don't rely on anything that you've heard in this podcast. But please do feel free to contact me if you'd like further information or specific advice.